Lychiana flower, for which the Chalmeopsis was named. There, it's just a special part of the world like no other. And it's such a privilege to be able to advocate for the mountains and forests that you love. And we don't just do forest defense, we're also involved in stewardship and in restoration. And I think that one of the antidotes to despair is action, and restoration action can really leave you feeling like you've left a place literally better than you found it. You know, if you're planting for pollinators, you're a forest hero. You know, if you're helping riparian vegetation get established, you're a forest hero. If you're removing noxious weeds by hand instead of spraying, you're a forest hero. And those are the kind of little acts that don't seem like, gosh, I didn't stop climate change today, but you know, I made a difference in my backyard, I made a difference in my watershed, I made a difference for my community. And you know, those things add up, and they're good for the soul as well.
Well, that's our show. Thank you so much for listening. If you have feedback, my email is michael@coastrange.org.
I'm Naomi Klein, and you are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Development and Events Committee meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 4:30 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
Welcome to this edition of When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine, a discussion of sustainable living and what that means to you and me. I'm Jay Warmke.
And I'm Annie Warmke.
Yes, indeed you are. And today we're going to talk about that it is the end of the world as we know it, part one. Okay, part one. It's sort of like the history of the world, part two, only without the funny. And we're joined today by Anna Hott and Dahlia Fab Soto. And they're two young women who are going to join us because we're trying to get sort of an old farts versus young farts perspective.
I don't think they appreciate being young farts. They have to wait a while for that.
All right. So we're going to – you guys were both born after the year 2000, right?
That's correct. Yeah.
So we can safely assume you know nothing?
Absolutely. Okay. Nothing in my brain.
You're starting already? Oh, my word. Well, there we go. That's the tone.
All right. So you guys were born after the year 2000. So how are things going
well,
so far?
Well, wait. Let's give them a pedigree. So Anna graduated from OSU.
Won't hold that against her.
No. And with a degree in environmental and also a second degree in some kind of environmental something.
Right?
Yeah, environmental policy and decision making.
Okay. So how's that going so far?
Well, and then your other degree was what?
In psychology.
Okay.
Okay. And Dahlia is also going to OSU. Mm-hmm. Man, it's like shooting fish in a barrel here. So it's Ohio University versus OSU.
Ohio University.
So you guys don't have a chance. All right. So what are you studying?
I'm majoring in biology. May change in the future.
biology will change or your degree?
Biology.
Biology will change.
Which comes first?
Okay, so you were born after the year 2000. So my question is, how are things going so far? I'm going to pick up.
What do you mean?
Dahlia. Okay. Well, part of what we're going to be dealing, I'll set it up a little bit here.
Okay.
Is we're saying, all right, you guys, we rant and rave on this podcast periodically about, you know, how the things are going to hell in a handbasket and all of that kind of thing. And we have one perspective because both of us were born.
No, we actually have two. You have a different one from me often.
Yes. Mine is the correct perspective. And we were born in the 1950s. And I found in some discussions with interns such as yourselves that my perspective and your perspective are often radically different. Doesn't mean either one is right or wrong. They're just different.
But yours is also radically different from mine. So what does that mean?
Okay, so mine is always right. So Dahlia, we're wanting to get a sense of how things are going. What's your mood? What's the mood of the world from you're speaking for your entire generation now?
Oh, wow. Well, I think there's a lot of like false hope, honestly. I mean, stuff is really bad right now.
What kind of stuff? We have four people with two mics and Jay's like shoving my face into the mic. So what kind of stuff?
I mean, all the presidential stuff. We have racism that we're still dealing with. We have like money problems. We have people living on the streets and people starving. We're just not dealing with this stuff as we should be, and it's just continually getting worse, and people are just sitting there saying, oh, it's fine, it's how it's usually been, so what is there to do? But that's what we need to figure out, and that's what we need to actually put our efforts towards, to make living for everybody, not only in the U.S., but everywhere, a better time.
Okay, so Anna, are you going to nod your head and agree? But since this is radio, don't nod your head.
Yeah, I'm pretty pessimistic when it comes to society right now. I am very hopeful. I want people to prove me wrong. Please prove me wrong. But because I learned a lot about social psychology and why and how people make decisions, I find myself very skeptical about positive change in society right now. I hope that the reason things seem so bad is because of the increased media attention and media coverage towards negativity and negative events, because those get more attention. So I'm hopeful that things have been this way, and it's just we're more cognizant of it because of media. But yeah, I'm pretty skeptical and pessimistic as well.
Okay, so are these problems that you guys caused, or are they our fault? Specifically Annie's fault. So
well, I don't really think it's your guys' fault. I mean, you guys are doing stuff that actually helps the planet and people, but a lot of the older generation just kind of said okay and lived with it and didn't really fight back, which mm-hmm. I think the younger generation is finally saying, we're not going to live like this anymore, so we have to make a change.
Okay, well, I'll own some of that, though. I mean, I benefited from all of these things that sort of caused all of these problems, you know.
Well, the thing I would say is, having just read Howard Zinn's People's History of the United States, is that, you know, the things that we're facing have been they have a long story that began, well, probably well before this country was established, but certainly from the beginning of the establishment of the government here, and how people have been pitted against each other, different classes of people, all to benefit the rich. And I feel like right now we see the culmination of how that really works with the destruction and the breakdown of pretty much every system in our culture. And so if you ask me the question, how are things going? I have to say they're going really well, because we're right on target for the end of the world as we know it. And thank God for that, because, or any other deity, because we need to start over. And I think right now,
so when you say they're going well, it's basically we set out to destroy the world and everything's right on track.
I think we didn't set out to destroy the world. We set a system together that pitted people against each other, which we see it at its really worst right now. And it was to enable the wealthy to become wealthier, five people in the world to become wealthier. I'm exaggerating, but and so what happens at some point is that plays itself out. It's a game that cannot sustain itself. And so that's where we are culturally. And so what I see is that this is a time of sort of transition from all of that destruction and people beginning to accept that these systems don't work anymore. Dahlia's description is quite good about that. And that and where we are is a time of trying to find hope and saying, you know, nothing is working, not even the protesting, not even the dissent that used to help a little in the past and change things for the better sometimes. How I think things are going so far.
Are we really in a transition? And I'm going to point this one here at Anna, since I'm going to have to identify you guys. Otherwise, you're going to sit here and wait for the other to answer. But if I look at our generation, you know, we were coming of age during sort of the mass protest hippie movement. Everything is going to change. We're going to change the universe. You know, we're not going to be like our parents' generation. And then our generation was worse than
they just sold out.
I mean, we were worse than everybody.
That's who's in charge and right now.
So are we indeed going through a transition, or are you guys going to be as hypocritical as we were?
Oh, yeah. I think everyone's a hypocrite.
Okay, well, that's hopeful.
I think right now is that people want change, and they want to make the world better. I think a lot is people don't know what to do, and they don't know where to put their efforts and their energy. And that's kind of taking us into a lull of doing nothing instead. And so I think, like, the Black Lives Matter protest really shows that there was so much energy and enthusiasm for all of the protest, and then it kind of fizzled out. And it's kind of similar with the war in Ukraine. At the beginning, everyone was really involved trying to help out, and now you really can't find much news on the war in Ukraine unless you're really, really looking for it, because there's very little news coverage on the war. And so I think we want to do something, but we're also lazy. And there's so much stimuli and so much going on in the world, so many different issues, so much trying to take our attention away, that instead of doing something that we really, really want to do, we just continue with the current system.
Okay, Dahlia, you got anything Dad on that?
I agree with Anna on that, and I also think it's all kind of just a game where we just taunt each other, and some people want to do things, other people just want to do things to spite the other person, and it's like everything is entertainment for us. And that's why news coverage, I mean, the war in Ukraine, it used to have a lot of news coverage, but now there are like smaller stories where, oh, it's just a funny thing to read or something like that. And so we put our minds on that and not focus on the really important stuff anymore, which is what we really need to focus on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Like with news coverage, almost everything is negative because that's what grabs people's attention. And so there has to be more positive in the world than negative. There has to be more positive.
More cat videos.
Exactly. There has to be.
That's what I'm going for.
There has to be good people out there, because I know a ton of good people, and I know more good people than negative, and maybe that's just me. But I would love to see more positive in the news, but...
Would you read it?
That's a great question.
So I want to say, when you say good people, so there are lots of people who are going to smile and nod their head and appear to do the right thing. But when there's a need for change, they fail to act or stand up or speak up because they don't want to draw negativity to themselves, or they fear what will happen if they speak up because they've been taught not to. It's a control mechanism. But I wanted to say something that just struck me is that, you know, we often talk about how we don't really feel like we have very much control right now, because no matter what we do to try to influence the government or corporations, they just get away with literally murder. But it occurred to me that one of the things that is going on when you ask how are things so far is that your generation and the one just above you are defying the 60-hour work week. They're saying, we're going to work to live, not live to work. And they're refusing, outright refusing. They're also refusing low pay. They'd rather sit home and play games. And this isn't laziness. This is saying, I can't afford to work for you. Mm-hmm. And they're making a statement in that. And the corporations have been forced to pay a basic living wage. Also, you're a generation that has said, we will not hate. That's going to have a long-term impact over time. And we can talk about that in the next...
I'm going to dispute that one.
Okay, dispute away, Jay.
All right. No, I think every generation picks and chooses who they want to hate, you know, and it's just a matter of which group is included this time, which group is excluded this time.
Okay, well, if we're allowed to marry whomever we want.
Yeah, well, that's one area, and I think that's progress. Well, this gets to my next question here.
All right, but wait,
there's one more.
And that is that you are going to refuse to own vehicles, that you personally, everybody has their own vehicle.
Well, that's easy. You can't afford it.
Well, but that's fine. I'm telling you what they have control over now. And so...
Okay.
Sharing rides, you know, all the things that you can do to have transportation.
Right. Okay. So that gets to my question, because we talked about what is bad, what are things that are negative that's been happening in your short, teeny little fruit fly lifestyle. Before I get into that, okay, I know I'm wondering. Okay, well let me take a brief break here before I get beat up.
Response.
Yeah. Just to let everybody know that you are listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke, reminding you it is indeed the end of the world as we know it.
And thank God.
Thank God. Okay, so I was just in the process of insulting an entire generation.
Starting with two people who live with us
who are sitting
so
here.
Could you be nicer, here, please?
And
we're
sometimes
scared now.
Make the meals, so I may not be eating eating for a while.
Onions. We will repay you with onions.
So I'm saying that there have been negative things, which you've outlined. What are some of the positive things that you think in the last several years are coming about? Annie's giving her perspective on the fact that you... very inclusive with LGBTQ pluses.
oh my!
I'm a plus. And
I don't even want to hear what that means.
Okay. No cars, no transportation. Don't go in and take any job that's offered. Do you agree with that? And are there other things, or do you think that's nonsense, or what?
Well, I think that kind of boycotting the government
way to
like
go.
That is honestly probably a good plan, you know. If we stop buying stuff at a store, the store is gonna go down. I mean, that's the basics of it. But
you're saying less consumption?
That would be great.
Is that happening though? Is that something
I
that you see?
I don't think so. Especially actually with our generation, I feel like a lot of people are consuming a lot still.
I do want to say though that the stores, the big box stores, are having a lot of trouble with getting customers right now. Mm. So that could be a lot of things, but people do shop online, but also we're in a recession. So so there is less consumption happening at this moment. It may not last, but we can hope.
In my experience, my parents consume a lot more than my college friends. So they're always having Amazon packages delivered like every day or every other day. and my friends from college maybe once a week, if that.
But is that because they're college students, or just do they live like that in general?
I think it's a combination of not having a lot of money and then also being college students. Mm-hmm. So not having reliable delivery, or having to worry about people taking the packages off of the porch before they can get to them.
But you know, this leads to some, what I see anyway, I don't know the statistics of this, but younger people repurposing, reusing, demanding to learn more about how to repair things, but also shopping at thrift stores and charity shops where they find cool stuff, versus, you know, always having to have, you know, something brand new, although you find plenty of brand new things in a thrift store. So I see where we are right now with that, is that there, to me, it looks like there's more of that kind of thing going on, which is a good thing.
Well, let me point out something and see if you agree or disagree, because one of the things Annie mentioned from her perspective is this wider acceptance of gender fluidity in a generation.
Oh my
very
God.
Much.
Are we going there?
No. But okay. I'm just going to point out that I'm agreeing with Annie on this from my perspective.
Write that on the calendar.
I know. Because I taught a class, and this was at a local community college, and I was concerned because in that class I knew I was going to have a transgendered individual and a woman who was like in a hijab, and this was a class that was primarily 19-year-old Appalachian males.
White boys.
Yes. And I was thinking, oh heavens, how am I going to deal with this? Because this transgender person was clearly, I mean, big beard with a dress kind of thing. And I thought this was going to be a big problem. And I will tell you, in the week that we were there, I seemed to be the only person who noticed or cared. Nobody in that class made any issue of any of this except for me. And I was sitting there like watching everybody waiting for something
well,
bad
that's
to happen.
You were the grown up white guy. You should have been.
Well, but I'm thinking, well, that's great. I mean, it wasn't
great.
That they were pretending not to care. It seemed to me they truly didn't care.
Or they were afraid of you.
So no, they weren't. That I can tell you was not the case. But so well, do you
that's
think that's
I mean.
Accepted? Do you think that's true? Do you think that perspective is true?
As someone who's a part of the LGBT community, I don't really surround myself with people who aren't acceptive. But from my experience in college, if there is someone who's like homophobic or transphobic, they're either very quiet and don't say anything, or it's a very, very small population, at least at OSU.
Mm-hmm. For me, starting out at a Catholic elementary school where there were only like two other black kids and me and one other person were Hispanic, and then moving from there to public schools where there was like a lot bigger range with that stuff, it was just more normal, I guess. It wasn't as cutthroat there as it was in my elementary school. And I mean, people don't make a big deal about it. It's just, you're a student, I'm a student, we're classmates, and that's it.
So you feeling that not only is the gender fluidity thing kind of just disappearing into the background of society, but do you think racial distinctions within your generation, knowing that there are big problems elsewhere, do you feel that's really disappearing, or is it just simply being silenced?
I think there's, with society today, there's so much systematic racism that's definitely very much provident. And I think sometimes it's hard to see and acknowledge that because we're so used to how things have been. It's hard to take off the rose-colored glasses and identify all of them. So that's definitely still an issue in our generation, even looking at everything that's happened before and currently happening with the government and institutions, that's definitely still prominent. I think racism at a more individual level, I think bigots are still teaching their children bigotry. I think that's still happening. I would love to think that racism on an individual level is declining and we are more receptive to anybody regardless, but I can't say that for certain.
I think I do believe that there are changes, but I think it is more at socioeconomic level. Depending on your socioeconomic level, that's going to influence that, because I think there are different areas where it isn't true that there is no line between race or gender or any of that, and people thrive on it.
Yeah, we should acknowledge this is not exactly sampling, you know. We've got people, four people of privilege sitting in here talking about the way society is going to be.
That's true.
And I'm the most privileged. So
yes, we acknowledge that, but we don't accept it. So it's okay. We still love you.
There you go. So I always think I need to own my own privilege.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. But thank you for doing it.
Okay. Well,
I'm serious. I am serious. There you go. I value that.
It's
about
because
you.
I'm old. I'm trying to get into heaven. So
well, your crown's a little lopsided right now, but it was straightened up slightly with that comment.
Well, you better not get into heaven anytime soon.
No, that's true.
I don't think I'd like my neighbors. So we've been talking a little bit. I'm trying to keep some vague notion of organization to this discussion. So we're saying, okay, what's been going wrong? What's been going right? In our next edition, part two of The End of the World, I'm going to be asking you guys, what can you do about it to fix things? But at the moment, I'm still wanting to look a little bit backwards. And one of the things you mentioned, I think it was you, Dahlia, that you're so annoyed with people saying it's always been thus, things are fine, it's always been the end of the world. And all of that. And so I've got a whole page of statistics here to show you that it's always been this way. Oh, no. I'm not going to go through them, but I think one of the issues.
Well, give us an example.
Well, an example, like in 1820, 200 years ago, 95% of the world's population lived on today's equivalent of $1.90 a day. They were in extreme poverty. Today, the statistic is less than 10%. Live under those same conditions. So that's been flipped. 200 years ago, 10% of the world's population could read and write. Today, that's about 85%. So when you're looking over long periods of time, things progressively appear, from a straight statistical standpoint, to be getting better. Of course, my dad was an economist, and he always used to say, in the long run, you're dead. So, everything is short term. From your own perspectives. So this gets into the argument Annie and I have all the time when I say things are getting better, and she goes, but it doesn't feel that way.
Mm-hmm. No, you know? And when I look around, but what I was going to say is that one of the things that I understand from looking at history, his story, as they say.
Mm-hmm. My story.
Yeah, the white guy's story, is that the only time things got better, it wasn't because people necessarily wanted to do the right thing, but the government and corporations in this country specifically needed for things to get better, like sewage. And yes, it was women, the local women's group that forced the pigs out of the, green space in town so the poop wasn't everywhere. But that it has traditionally been almost 100% the reason that things changed and got better. People learned to read because corporations needed them to be able to read to produce goods for consumption. The government needed things to get better because people were dying en masse. And causing all kinds of pandemics like we've just been through. So we're in a point right now where people don't even seem to care. We just had a pandemic. We're still having the effects of that. And the government has basically really not made any changes.
Well, nor Dahlia, you're saying that you got to just ignore the government, right?
Well, I have...
you anarchist.
I have a question for you. Is it better for the planet or is it better for the people?
Because oh, touche.
In my humble opinion, if our planet is breaking apart at its seams, then the problems of the people don't matter because we'll be dead if we don't have a planet to live on. Okay. So we should focus on the planet and then the people.
Okay, well, on that happy note, we want to thank you. You have been listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Doomed Warmke. We want to thank our two guests here, Anna Hott and Dahlia Fab Soto. And we want to thank our Emmy Award winning just back from COVID vacation producer Adam Rich after his excursion to Toledo. And we want to thank you for spending just a little bit of time with us. And as your grandmother hopefully told you, the secret to a happy and sustainable life is...
play nice with others, clean up your own mess, and eat your veggies, Jay.
Before the world ends.
That's right.
Till next time. Bye-bye.
You can find more information on living sustainably in our unsustainable world at BlueRockStation.com.
I love you, K-Boo.
Edition of When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine, a discussion of sustainable living and what that means to you and me. I am Jay Warmke.
I think I'm Annie Warmke today.
You are today.
Not sure.
Check your pulse. Yes, you still are. And today we're going to talk about It's the End of the World as We Know It, Part 2.
Oh,
right? Part 2. So in Part 1, oh, and I should say we are joined.
I almost forgot the young parts.
I know. I almost forgot the young parts. We're joined today for a perspective from the post-2000 league. I keep wanting to say 20-something. 2000. joined by Anna Hott and Dahlia Fab Soto. And they are joining us to give us the perspective of representing their entire generation of younger people. Anna is a recent graduate from OSU mm-hmm. with a degree in environmental policy.
And decision making.
And decision making. No, nobody in policy ever makes a decision. They have a committee meeting, they distribute a memo, and then they say why they can't do it, and they have to have another meeting. Yeah. And psychology. Okay, I just gave you a doctorate. And Dahlia is also a student at OSU, and you are studying
biology,
which I won't even get into. But you're thinking of changing that,
yes?
Maybe to what? What would be after post biology?
It might be anthropology. And or archaeology.
So dead biology.
I think it's going to be plumbing, electrical, and welding.
All right.
So I'm interested in alive people. Dahlia is interested in the people who are already dead.
I think I'm with Dahlia.
I know you are.
Dead people are a lot less trouble. So, all right. And representing Ohio University in this
corner, the Ohio University
is Annie Warmke, along with the Ohio University graduate, Jay Warmke. And our discussion in part one of this epic was that we were trying to get a perspective of how things are going. Basically, from your perspective.
In our culture.
And you guys were agreeing that everything's kind of fallen apart and it's Annie's fault. So I think we're all agreed in that.
I am the opposition leader, so I don't care.
And I thought that was interesting because, you know, the takeaway I found is because I'm tend to be optimistic that things, yeah, they feel like they're bad. But when you look at the long term, it's like looking at a painting from a long way away versus close up.
From a distance.
Yeah, everything looks crappy when you study it really close. You know, you see all the pimples and everything. But it looks good when you back up. Annie and you guys are saying, but I don't live backed up. I live in the middle of this sewer and it feels bad. Okay, so that's kind of the takeaway. So my
well, that might not be so bad, except we live in a culture that is way out there and is refusing to acknowledge that these things exist.
Yeah,
well, and that's what we talked about in the last episode.
I don't know if they refuse to acknowledge it, because if you asked people, are things going pretty crappy, they would tend to say, yeah, you know, but are you going to do anything about it? And then they would go, well, you know, what about Kim Kardashian, you know?
Why me?
Yeah, why me? No. And that's
what's in it for me.
Yeah. And that, I think, is a realistic perspective. When we look at these global problems, when you look at the problem of global warming, the political dysfunction, poverty, racism, all of these things, what can you do about it? You know, as an individual, what can you do?
Well, so I'm not going to answer that question yet, but I am going to say...
See, there's the problem.
that one of the things that we don't do is look at the whole picture. So it's fine to say we're going to all draw back and from a distance, we're going to look at everything and it's going to look great. But we don't look at the whole picture. We only look at how it impacts me and the world that I am living in, which might be, you know, the apartment building or a house on the cul-de-sac. So what I think we like to talk about, I know we talk about at Blue Rock Station and we talk about on the podcast, is the idea of looking at all the facets, all these categories of life, and making some kind of measurement, like how we access information and education. Most people are going to say Facebook. That's the wrong answer. You know, we need to have better ways we look at these different systems that have fallen apart. And that's what we talked about in the last episode.
Okay, that's what we talked about. So let's talk about what we're going to talk about. So, okay, Dahlia, Anna, what do you think we as a society and you as individuals can do to try and make the world a little bit better?
Let's talk about the challenges. What are the challenges in things like education, politics, social, and being resilient?
All right. Okay.
Well, I often think that it's really bad how people over the years and still now are, they go to school, they have terrible schooling in the US. We don't learn stuff that we can actually use in our day-to-day lives. And then we go to college, at least some of us go to college, and then we graduate, and then you're forced to work for a long time. You're probably in debt, and then you retire and you still have stuff to pay. It's like all you have to focus on is working for the government, which doesn't really sound fun. So it's just kind of sad how we've built this system to just make ourselves unhappy, and we should focus on being happy. Anna actually said a few days ago or yesterday how people are kind of in this forced isolation. You're kind of supposed to, you have all these problems and you're supposed to deal with them on your own, and you're supposed to put up with that, even though in harmony, it just works better. If you can depend on someone and they can depend on you, that's a good relationship to have and to build on and to utilize, because it just makes both of you happier in the long run.
Yeah, and I think it, especially today, it's kind of like three steps forward and then two steps back. So it seems like progress is being made and then there's a push backwards, but you're still a little bit ahead from where we used to be. And I think especially with education, like Dahlia said, we're not really taught to succeed in the real world. We're not taught about taxes and how to file taxes. We're not taught, well, if your parents taught you or your grandparents taught you how to cook, but I was never taught to cook. How do you meal prep and plan out your food so you're not doing takeout and fast food, which is terrible for your budget and terrible for your body?
One thing you talked about is the need to know more about banking and writing checks and managing all of that.
Absolutely. We're not taught to be resilient. We're not taught how to thrive. We're taught how to be reliant on the government and big ag and institutions that make more money than we could ever count or ever see.
Do you think any of these groups are coming to help you?
Oh, absolutely not.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because you raise the issue, the same exact issue. I've been attending a lot of these national workforce development meetings, and all of the people, I particularly am involved in the solar industry, and the solar people are always telling the government, they say, what do you need from the educational environment? And they come back and they say, we need people with basic life skills. Are they going to show up to work? Can they figure out how to get from here to there? Can they not be taking drugs? Can they do basic addition, multiplication? It never comes up to, we need highly trained technical engineering types. It's always like, we need the basic life skills because the people we're seeing don't have it. And now what I'm hearing you say is, that's what I want, man. I want these basic life skills because nobody's teaching me these things.
Yeah. And a lot of the things you're either taught by watching someone else do them, if you're lucky, or you struggle through and have to teach yourself.
And nobody's got grandma at home showing you how to do baked cookies anymore?
Well, one thing that we learned, Jay and I learned after the 2016 election of Trump, we had a lot of people contacting us, former interns and young people. They were mostly young people, and they were distraught. And so we said, come for the weekend, and they did. And we had a lot of discussion about, what their hopes and dreams were and what the challenges were. And the number one thing that came up was the need to have skill sets that give you resiliency. They said that would make them feel helpful. This is like a long time ago, 2016, and we're still looking at this issue and no real change. Anyway, one of the things that we were talking about yesterday is the fact that there have been several states that have tried to make it against the law to repair things. So you couldn't set up a shop to repair toasters or microwaves.
I've been trying to make that a law in this house for a while because it always ends up. That is absolutely, that's like the most, it's almost a parody of corporatism.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't want you to have the ability or even the legal right to fix something. We want to force you to buy something new.
Yeah, and that's so ridiculous.
Well, planned obsolescence, everything is built to go bad in 6 months. And like we had a washing machine that went bad pretty quickly after the warranty went off of it. And so I asked the guy, could we just replace the drum? And he said, no, because it would be $1,000 because it's welded to the housing. And that means you got to replace everything. Well, they did that on purpose because now you can't fix it.
All right. So you're saying that basic life skills, you're going through, you're paying a lot of money to get an education. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The education you're getting is not necessarily the education you need. Mm-hmm. This is one of the criticisms I have of the educational system being involved in it as a teacher, is it always feels like people teach what's easy to teach and they test what's easy to test rather than getting into what you really need to know. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of an aside. But then I guess the other question is, my initial question to you was perhaps wrong. What can you do about it? Well, is that then imposing upon you the old John Wayne manifest destiny? We're all Americans and we're going to deal with it. And should it be more the collective, what are we going to do about it? Because maybe these problems cannot be solved by you.
but they can be solved by us.
I would agree with that because, I mean, with the whole localization stuff that I've learned being here, it's just an ideal situation to be in where it's not all only on one person to make the difference, but it's actually a large group of people working together to actually make change, which is usually how it's been made. And in using basic life skills that we could learn in school, it would just make like creating that group a lot easier for everybody.
Yeah, and I think asking that question kind of makes people feel hopeless because it's like, well, what can I do? Mm-hmm. Because we're kind of taught not to think for ourselves. We're taught how to listen to orders, follow directions, and not talk unless we're asked a question. And so when we actually are asked questions that are thought-provoking and need time to think about, we're kind of like deer in the headlights. Well, I don't know. There's nothing I can do. And that's really an issue. We need to, yeah, there's something that I can do. There's something that everyone can do. And Dahlia is completely right. We could get together as a community and community action. But we think, me individually, we don't consider the broader picture of community.
Well, let me break here for a second and let everybody know that you are listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke, reminding you it is indeed the end of the world as we know it.
And thank God.
Thank God. All right. So, and maybe change will happen because it has to.
Yeah, well, that's a whole nother thing we could go into, but I want to just make one comment on what Dahlia said, because, and also Anna, because we believe here in the work we do at Blue Rock Station in that idea of building community. But one of the things that corporations like to do is to make it about the individual, put that focus back on that individual instead of the corporation. So, you know, they love to greenwash things, like they're doing so great when it's a bold-faced lie, but then they say it's on you, you need to fix your water faucet, or you need to shop locally or whatever. And
oh, they never say that.
Oh yeah, they do. Oh yeah.
They're a local vendor.
Don't use straws.
I saw a tobacco company.
Yeah, don't use straws. That's going to save the world.
There you go. And so I think we have to move out of that way of thinking. I think we have to refuse to say it's about the individual. It is about how I contribute to the group, mm-hmm. but it is not about, it's not my responsibility to change things. And if we take the tact it is, then that's how we get to where we are right now, where we're totally neutered in terms
helpless.
Of being able to make change, because nobody in corporate America and nobody in the government is really listening.
Well, I saw an interesting video long ago. It was like they were interviewing the CEO of Nokia, which was, I think, a Swedish firm. And they were asking him, he said, basically, he made like $10 million a year, and he paid $7 million a year in taxes, or $8 million a year in taxes. And the American Business Reporter was saying, why do you, isn't that terrible? And he was looking at him going, I am proud to be able to contribute that much to my country. My country does so much for me. And who needs more than $2 million? I mean, that's crazy. And it was just this perspective that's completely different than the American version of he who dies with the most toys wins, you know? And that was an interesting perspective. So speaking of interesting perspectives, I wanted to throw this past you and see. There's an interesting book called The Paradox of Choice. And this is one of those issues that may contribute to people's unhappiness. And I think your generation is faced with this more than any other. You mentioned in the last show that there are just so many news outlets, so many media, so many distractions. And this paradox of choice says, when you are given too many choices, you will feel less happy than if you're given just a couple of choices. Mm-hmm. Because what that does is it builds unrealistic expectations for yourself. For instance, you look at Facebook and everybody's best day is, you're assuming, is the normal day. and they're posting about their vacation in Cancun, and you're going, how come I can't afford to go to Toledo, you know? And then the other thing is, when you have so many choices and you come away feeling dissatisfied, it's your fault because you're the one who made the choice. You know, so what's your perspective on that? Do you see that in reality, or is that somebody explaining why things are going to crap?
Well, I just want to say, while you're thinking about that, is that there's a study that was done in the 1950s to look at people's happiness, their level of happiness. And the peak happiness in this country happened in 1956, and it has gone down every year.
And we had
since
no
then.
Choices in 1956.
We had TV dinners.
Yeah. All right. So what's your perspective on that? Do you feel better when you get to choose between 7,000 things on a menu versus six?
Well, for a menu, the more the better, I would say. But in life, I think it's better if there's a limited amount of choices to make, because we often get overwhelmed, and then it turns to discouragement, and then we just don't know what to do, and we just sit there and can't think about the right choice to make anymore. And then we go into the struggle of, like, knowing, should we make the choice for yourself or for other people? And it's just hard to choose when there are so many choices to make.
So you're paralyzed.
Yes. And if you do make a decision, then afterwards you most likely are going to regret your decision when you find out that there is a better choice to make, either financially or for the environment, and then you'll just feel guilty.
Mm-hmm. And I think a big part of it is with, like, comparing ourselves to other people. It's like, if we make this choice and someone else makes another choice, oh, is that one better? And did I make the wrong choice? And I think comparing ourselves with other people is really the base of a lot of problems that we have and deal with still. And I think we should just take accountability for ourselves and try to build confidence and be competent in your own person.
Yeah. And another thing is that we are creatures of habit. And when we are given that many choices, sometimes we fall back on what we've done before or what our parents did before because it's familiar. Even though it may not be the best choice, it may be the worst choice, but it gives us some kind of hold to hold on to, because at least we can fall back on that rather than try something new.
Well, it's also muscle memory, you know. If the reality is it feels familiar, and so you're going to do it.
Well, when you were saying this, it reminded me a little bit. I was talking to our granddaughter, Catlin, back when she was in high school, and I was saying, you know, if I could go back to high school, the one thing I wish I knew then was I spent my entire time in high school mortified that everybody was looking at me, everything I did was being judged, and I was being criticized. And now I realize nobody really cared about what I did or how I looked. They're all mortified that everybody's looking at them. And I wish that had given me, if I knew that, I think I would have maybe had more confidence. So how can you, knowing this, because I just told you, right? how can you get, I mean, more confident? I mean, you guys are saying, okay, I got to go out and change the world as a group, collectively or individually. You know, what can you do? What are you learning in this process of being here at Blue Rock Station or life or general? It's going to give you a little more confidence.
I think for me, at least, to be more confident, it's just to have, like, these skills that I've learned here, whether it's like gardening for myself, providing myself with food, like some workshop skills like carpentry or plumbing or stuff like that. It's just so I know that I can do it myself and I don't have to rely on some corporation to call someone to come into my house and fix it for me. And it might be a bad job, it might be low quality, and then I have to keep relying on them and calling them to keep fixing it. Whereas I can just do it myself, And then I realized that I can keep doing stuff myself, and that would help me build confidence at least.
Yeah, absolutely. That kind of self-sufficient and being able to rely on yourself, but then also being open to accept help from others or give help to others if they need it. And I think something that we've talked about a little bit is being able to be resilient and being able to continue on living without the need of corporate America shoving their way into your window or door, which they'll be very happy to do. So kind of what Dahlia talked about, like being able to grow your own food, that's something that is a long-term goal of mine. It's not something that is going to be, I'm not going to be able to accomplish that this year and probably not next year, but it's something that I want to be able to do. I want to be able to rely upon myself for my own produce. And I think that's really important, regardless of what topic or focus people go into, being able to rely upon themselves and to people close to them would make significant change.
One of the things that I've seen in working with women in workshops where we teach carpentry and things like that is we're not really teaching carpentry. That takes a long time to learn, but we are teaching things like how to measure, how to pull nails. The first time women actually pull nails and use the leverage, that not just try to yank on it, which hardly ever works, they're so proud of themselves. It's like an instant boost in confidence. They learn how to back up a trailer, an instant boost of confidence. And so these are not brainiac things. These are things that are just sort of like you have the ability to do it, just somebody teaching you the little nuances of how it works. And I feel like if we talk about the future and where we're going with things, I think we are going to be looking at a big surge, a big push for people to learn resiliency. They're going to have to with what's coming with all the climate changes. And it's going to build a certain level of confidence in people.
Well, I think it sounds like, if I'm going to try and sum up what we're seeing here, what I'm seeing here, is you're saying, I have felt so helpless and discouraged because for so long it's been the government's going to fix this, the corporations are going to fix this, my educational system's going to fix this, and I've been disappointed and let down every single time I've had to depend on some nebulous entity that tells me they're going to make it all right. And now I just need to understand, I got to fix it. I got to fix me. You know, I've got to be able. And if you begin to have those skills to say, I may not know how to fix a lawnmower right now because it broke down, but I know enough to figure out how to figure it out. Mm-hmm. And that That's makes big. Me feel a lot better, a lot less out of control, you know, or I don't know, I don't have a tomato right now, but I know how to grow one, you know. Well, that takes some of the pressure off because these other entities just constantly let you down.
But also understanding the process, like I'm going to save seeds and be a revolutionary, and then for sure I'm going to grow tomatoes.
Oh, you little subversive.
I know it. I'm the opposition leader.
I've got zucchini. Woo!
And the seeds to prove it. So, but what I thought we could end with, because we're going to run out of time here, is what do you think enough looks like? And I feel like that's an important thing to define in my own life, because when I know what enough looks like, then I can be content.
For me, enough is just a vision comes to my mind where I just have a small little house somewhere in the country land and a garden, and I can maybe drive to the nearby town and pick up stuff from other people. But it's just like the simple living is enough for me. I don't need to live in a skyscraper. I don't need 5 TVs. It's just too much. And we live like that now because it's so easy to get all of that for a lot of people. And it's immediate. But we need to be more self-aware and realize that stuff takes time. And that's okay. You don't need to be impatient about it.
Yeah, I couldn't say it better myself. I think a little cottage in the woods is my dream. Maybe have some goats. We'll see. And yeah, being able to have a vegetable garden as well as an herb garden because I love tea. And then maybe if I'm very lucky, have some flowers to go along with them.
Okay, well, coming from the land of enough, a little cabin in the woods with goats and the like, you've been listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jan Annie Warmke. We want to thank Anna Hott and Dahlia Fab Soto for joining us, giving you the perspective of a generation, and good luck to you. We screwed it up, now it's your turn. And we want to thank our Emmy Award-winning producer, Adam Rich. Thank you for spending a little time with us, and as your grandmother hopefully told you, the secret to a happy and sustainable life is...
play nice with others, clean up your own mess, and eat your veggies, Jay.
All right, till next time. Bye-bye.
You can find more information on living sustainably in our unsustainable world at BlueRockStation.com.
What do we mean when we talk about personality? What is your personality? It is the way you get along with other people around you. And with your changing environment. You want certain things from other people. The way to go about getting those things reveals your personality. Your personality is the way you affect other people. Think about that. The way you affect other people.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification.